And finally, Kelly Riley, the sister of Mr. Bingley.
Oh, yes.
Just like all I know her as the angry lady from Yellowstone.
Beth from Yellowstone.
Whatever. She's just the one
who seems
to be fighting people 100% of the time. Like, because Sarah watches and I kind of pass through a room and I'm like, man, she's getting into a fight again with somebody.
She's a really good, like, she's a very interesting character.
The fact that you're not disagreeing with me makes it seem like that is exactly who she is.
She's more on the violent side. I will say that. Like,
suppose she is a little angry sometimes. Welcome to the Rom-Com Rewind Podcast.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Devin.
And like you, I love rewatching movies over and over again.
You're here. You made it to us. You found us somehow. Do us a favor. Tell a friend. But also, we love romantic comedies, and we're assuming that you do as well.
So this is a show where we rewatch rom-coms, break them down a bit for you. Maybe take a peek behind the curtain, dig beneath the surface, and decide, does it still hold up?
Today we have the 2005 Pride and Prejudice. And wherever you're listening, throw us a follow, tell a friend. If you want to become more a part of the podcast, so many conversations that we have happen on our Instagram account, at Rom-Com Rewind.
We have a message from Caitlin, and this is about our Crossroads episode.
Ooh, Britney Spears.
She says, yay, I'm so excited to listen to this episode. Such a classic. A couple of years ago, I asked my partner for this movie on DVD. I just told him the title, and he ended up buying me an old Western movie.
Yeah, there is another one, yeah.
So funny to open on Christmas morning and then showing him the actual movie. So, of course, I had to ask, did you actually watch this movie? Yes, they did, and they kept it. He said he liked that version better than the Britney Spears version.
Yeah, I could see him saying that. I wonder what's going through his head, like going to the store and being like Crossroads and looking at it. And it's like this old grizzled. He's like, she wants this?
She's into Westerns.
Wow. How fascinating. Yeah, reach out on Instagram at Rom-Com Rewind for literally any rom-com pop culture conversation you want to have. We respond to every single DM. Pride and Prejudice. We did the 2005 romantic drama film directed by Joe Wright. This was actually his directorial debut, but Joe also directed Hannah, Peter Pan, Darkest Hour, Atonement. A lot of really cool movies. This is based off the 1813 Jane Austen novel of the same name. Pride and Prejudice is the story of Elizabeth Bennet, played by Keira Knightley. Elizabeth lives with her four sisters at a rural English estate. Her sisters consist of Jane, played by Rosamund Pike, Lydia, played by Jenna Malone, Kitty, played by Carrie Mulligan, and Mary, played by Tallulah Riley. Her father is Mr. Bennet, played by Donald Sutherland, and her mother, Miss Bennet, is played by Brenda Blethlin. So these girls are all single, and they're all kind of pining for their chance at love. This comes to a head as the eligible bachelor of the day, Mr. Bingley, played by Simon Woods. He arrives in town at a kind of like a ball or a dance, along with his relative and another eligible bachelor, Mr. Darcy. He's played by Matthew McFadden. And his sister, Caroline Bingley, played by Kelly Riley. There's lots of characters in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
There are even more that I haven't mentioned. Dame Judi Dench is in this, too. But that kind of moment launches a runaway train of love, loss, heartbreak, heartache. This is kind of the lead-in for your story of Pride and Prejudice. What are your thoughts?
Mr. Collins, at your service.
In an era when marrying a rich man was the most a woman could hope for, Elizabeth Bennet was way ahead of her time.
I singled you out as the companion of my future life.
Sir, I cannot accept you.
Don't worry, Mr. Collins.
Tell her you insist upon them marrying.
Oh, please.
You will have this house.
I can't marry.
And save your sisters from destitution.
She cannot make me.
This is the first time I've watched this movie. Like, hey. any TV show of Pride and Prejudice, any movie of Pride and Prejudice, this was the first time. This movie was very enjoyable. I really liked it. It's funny. Period pieces are an interesting beast.
yeah.
They're more movement and things happening versus a ton of script. But when you do get the script, it's old English or older English, I should say, than what it is now. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. I do, like I said, they're an interesting beast, but I do enjoy a good period piece. I mean, right now, Bridgerton is how big on Netflix? Everyone's so excited for the next season coming out in May. I think, you know, it's almost been 20 years. It'll be 20 years next year since this one, this iteration of it came out. They've done Spider-Man's in less time. Now,
yes, you are correct.
Maybe they'll do another one.
They've done Batman's in less time as well. There, yes. I think there have probably been three Jokers.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Pride and Prejudice.
And no, I really liked it. I liked Keira Knightley in as Elizabeth, as the main lead. And I think everybody who was cast did a really great job. I just love how everything was done. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed this movie.
Yeah, me too. You totally get how this is like a romance drama classic. But really, I would describe this as an epic. Like, it feels like this big, massive thing. And you really, yeah, I found it interesting. I found an article talking about how like the original script had a lot more of Jane Austen's original dialogue, and the director Joe Wright came in and kind of said like, let's modernize the script a little bit. I'm surprised because I would describe some of the conversations and dialogue and script in this movie as like dense. Like, you kind of, I would encourage you, if you haven't read, you know, a novel of this era recently, right, or if you haven't seen a movie that's kind of an adaption, I would turn the subtitles on because it is dense conversation. Sometimes it's very eloquent.
And it's fast.
And it's very beautiful and it's very fast, but sometimes you do need to kind of pay attention to this film. But I would kind of like put it in that, like, this is an epic. It's like how The Notebook is this big epic love story. I feel the same way about Pride and Prejudice. Like, it's not, this isn't like a small, cute little story. This is like, but their house is up for grabs at one point. Mr. Collins, there are estates passing hands. There's
happening.
There's so much that happens. So much love and so much heartbreak. And yeah, this was a really great retelling of what I would consider to be like an epic love story.
And you've read the book, right? You had said you read the book.
Yeah, it's been a while since I read the book. And it's funny because, I probably like 15 years ago I read the book maybe. And rewatching this, I'm like, I don't remember any of this shit. Like, this is, I remember about 40% of what happens here. Mostly the Mr. Darcy love story is what I remember. All the other stuff, like Mr. Collins showed up. I'm like,
oh my gosh, yeah.
Right, that guy. Okay, yeah, sure. And Wickham, I'm like, oh, I vaguely remember him. Yeah, I guess.
It's a love story of angst and longing and little touches. And it's very, I mean, that is true of what that time period was, right? And at that, you know, at one point, the family might be ruined and, oh no, and how to fix it. I will say one thing that I always find interesting about period pieces is that a lot of time passes and they have to figure out a way on how to show how time passes.
Yeah.
So it just kind of happens and you just go along with it. Like, you're just part of the ride.
And I feel like it's funny too, because the English countryside, it doesn't feel,
doesn't
like
change.
You don't get the season.
There's no
change.
Snow.
Yeah, I was recently watching
in this one anyway.
Yeah, I was watching this TikTok recently of this person from England coming to Canada, and they're like, "Yo, you guys have seasons."
Yes.
And it's hard to like, obviously in the UK they have seasons, yes, but like, but we have distinct, like,
right,
this is a different,
it's an easier way to tell passage of time through our seasons. Because at one point, and this is at the end, Mr. Darcy says, you know, let me know of your feelings if they're the same as last April. But you don't know what month
was
we're in. How long ago was this? What is the passage of time? What do you mean? So that was one piece that it was just like, okay, I don't actually know how, but so many
so
things
true
happen, right? When was last April? Last month? I don't know.
Could have been 10 days ago. Could have been 8 months ago. Yeah, we don't know.
Yeah. And nobody celebrates a birthday either in it. So you don't actually know if there's any passage of time.
Yeah.
They could have thrown that in there and at least you know a year went by.
And I find they're like, oh, like so-and-so spending a few months here, but then they always like leave ahead of time or what. So even that is hard to track. You're like, well, how long were they actually there then? I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. The movie opens with an eligible bachelor, Mr. Bingley, in town, and he can choose any of the girls to marry. He's a very eligible man.
So right off the bat in this film, they are giddy little schoolgirls. Like, the entire story of this movie is just like these girls getting married. And Mr. Bingley is like, he is a beautifully marinated steak that's being placed at the dinner table. And they are like, one of us is going to eat that.
Yes. All the girls are out in society, which is like they're eligible to be married. And okay, I do have to say though, up front, the mother is insufferable.
Oh, the mother is in this insufferable. Movie, absolutely.
I just like want to hold her two shoulders and just calm down.
Dude, like, they didn't have Xanax back then, but like she needed
one.
Take
a deep breath. Like you just need to relax. But I know at that point, like, and it's interesting because like they have only girls, right? So nobody to carry on the family line. And that's why the house would go to Mr. Collins.
This comes up later on.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so the duty of the mother and of course Mr. Bennett is to marry off their daughters, right? So like, but it's just so excessively done. And you know what? Maybe that's props to the mother for being insufferable, because she did a really good job. As you mentioned, Mr. Bingley comes to the ball and meets all of the sisters, Elizabeth, Jane, Mary, Lizzie, and Kitty. And we also get to meet Mr. Bingley's sister, Caroline, and Mr. Darcy.
Lots of people, like, we are just slammed with,
yes,
here's a whole family of Bennets, and now we're getting the love interest, like, almost immediately.
Right. So Elizabeth overhears Mr. Bingley and Mr. Darcy talking and saying that Jane is the most beautiful. And Mr. Bingley says, yes, so is Elizabeth. But Mr. Darcy disagrees and kind of throws some shade towards Elizabeth. And she overhears and kind of, you know, it hurts her ego a little bit. The next morning, Jane gets a letter from the family that Mr. Bingley would like to meet, and or I should say Miss Bingley, because Caroline wants to meet with her. Mr. Bingley won't be there. But in order to continue the meddling of the mother sends Jane on horseback while it's pouring rain so that she just has to stay at their estate for a long period of time because she will get a cold, which she does, and she has to stay until she gets better in order to travel back.
Right.
So again, the matchmaking works and it continues. However, Lizzie decides to go and see her sister Jane because it has been long enough. Again, we don't know the exact time of passage, but I think I'd say like a week, 2 weeks maybe.
You're too proud, Mr. Darcy. And would you consider pride a fault or a virtue?
That I couldn't say.
Because we're doing our best to find a fault in you.
Maybe it's that I find it hard to forgive the follies and vices of others or their offences against me. My good opinion, once lost, is lost forever.
Dear, I cannot tease you about that. What a shame, for I dearly love to laugh.
The mum and the girls go to pick up Jane after she's feeling better, and Mr. Darcy helps Elizabeth into the carriage. This is the first touch. And Mr. Darcy's somebody who's so, like, I don't know, he seems very secluded, very quiet, very off-put by Elizabeth. It's an interesting thing because, like, you can see him longingly look at Elizabeth, so you're kind of like, oh no, I think he does like Elizabeth.
Do you find it's longingly looking at? I find his facial reactions to be so hard to read, which I do remember from the book being a thing. Like, he's just a hard person to read. Notably so, though.
And it's funny, though, because anyway, it's never, anyway, yeah, I'm just going to leave it there. But when they do get home to their house, they find out that Mr. Collins, who will be taking over the inheritance and the house once Mr. Bennett dies, comes for dinner. He's extremely awkward. He's part of the clergy, and it sucks because things don't get passed down to the daughters. It would have to follow a male line, and they don't have a son, as mentioned earlier. So it would go to him and they would lose everything. He is taken by Jane, Mr. Collins.
As everybody, yeah.
But her mother quickly says that she's taken, but Lizzie is available. They meet that same day also a Mr. Wickham, who is a lieutenant in the militia, and Lizzie is smitten by him.
So now I think we've met pretty much every main character in our film. I find Pride and Prejudice is definitely a film that, as I was watching it, every person who walked across the screen, I'm like, oh my God, it's that guy from That Thing. And obviously, you know, there are the highlights that we're going to go through, but I wanted to go through the list of, hey, it's that person from That Thing for Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, let's do the easy ones. Keira Knightley, I don't think counts because she's been in so much stuff. You know her from Pirates of the Caribbean. The girl on the other side of the cue cards in Love Actually.
Yes.
Donald Sutherland and Judi Dench, I also think they've been in so much stuff that they don't really qualify in this category. But Jane, the sister, Rosamund Pike.
Yeah.
I saw her and immediately I'm like, oh, Ben Affleck kills her in Gone Girl. That's honestly the
only
thing.
Oh my God, that's so
thing.
Funny. I've never seen Gone Girl or read the book, so I didn't know that.
See, and the funny thing is, I don't even know if he kills her, but I think that's what the story is, right? Apparently she goes missing or something. I have no idea, but I just know there's something about Ben Affleck killing Rosamund Pike. That's right. All I got. Matthew McFadden. He's in Succession and his name's not Culkin. That's all. I'm like, it's the Succession guy who's not Kieran Culkin.
Okay, it's funny. I've also never watched Succession, so it's on my list.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I've got a really good one for you.
Okay.
The one I really loved is Tallulah Riley, who plays Mary Bennett. Mm-hmm. She's been in a few things, but
yes,
I totally clocked her being in an iconic scene in Inception. She's not really in Inception, but she is. So there's this scene where like Cillian Murphy's character is in a dream, right? And this blonde girl comes up to him at the bar and steals his wallet and walks away. And it's actually Tom Hardy playing a blonde girl. And then we get this iconic moment where Leo DiCaprio does the whole like, how do you know you're in a dream kind of thing?
Now, the easiest way for you to test yourself is to try and remember how you arrived at this hotel. Can you do that?
Right? The whole, like, how did you get here? When you're in a dream, you don't know how you get places kind of thing. Tallulah Riley was, like, the blonde girl right before that iconic line happens.
She was also married to Elon Musk.
Oh, was she?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. You know what? I've
twice,
got
twice. Twice.
Oh.
Let me just.
Oh my God.
She was married to him from 2010 to 2012 and 2013 to 2016. They tried it again, you know?
That's the most Elon Musk thing to happen. Like, I'm going to give it another shot, actually. I've actually got a better somebody's married to a person from this movie. Carey Mulligan, who plays Kitty. You know who she's married to?
Who?
Marcus Mumford.
Oh, really?
From Mumford and Sons.
Oh, my God.
The Mumford. Oh, the son of the, I don't know, the Mumford guy.
The Mumford guy.
Oh, that guy, Mr. Collins, Tom Hollander. He's been in so much, but as soon as I saw him, I'm like, he's the angry director in About Time. Remember, he goes to live with
the
guy and the play, and they do like they redo the play a number of times. Jenna Malone, you know her from Hunger Games as Joanna Mason.
Yes. She's
You also watched Homeland, right?
I did.
Mr. Wickham.
Mr. Wickham is from Homeland. Yes, I clocked him right away.
There you go.
And then Rosamund Pike was also, well, she's in The Wheel of Time right now.
Oh, really?
Yes.
It's getting interesting reviews, so I haven't really dipped my toes.
Well, I mean, I think
it.
The books are hard to live up to.
And that's the thing with a series like that.
And then she was most recently in Saltburn, the movie.
Oh my God, cool.
Yes, yeah. So she's actually been quite active recently.
And you know what? I don't know if Ben Affleck actually kills her. I should just make that
I
note.
Don't know.
I just watched the trailer. I'm like, seems like she dies.
I think there's quite some like twists and turns in that book. I hear it's quite a like a... So at the end.
And finally, Kelly Riley, the sister of Mr. Bingley.
Oh, yes.
Just like all I know her as the angry lady from Yellowstone.
Beth from Yellowstone.
Whatever. She's just the one
who's the angry lady. Oh, my God.
To be fighting people 100% of the time. Like, because Sarah watches and I kind of pass through a room and I'm like, man, she's getting into a fight again with somebody.
She's a really good, like, she's a very interesting character.
The fact that you're not disagreeing with me makes it seem like that is exactly who she is.
She's more on the violent side. I will say that. Like, I
suppose she is a little angry sometimes.
She's got some things going on, you know? She's got a lot going on.
Oh, man. But yeah, Mr. Collins is set to inherit the estate, and he's just like, he's very robotic in terms of his dialogue and his conversation.
Yes, and I think he wants a wife. He's not sought after. He doesn't have a massive amount of money, and he's not very good looking. So he doesn't have a lot going for him. But he thinks he can get one of his cousins to marry him.
Which, can I just say, there's a few of those things that happen that we just gloss over, but like, the comes up occasionally, like, oh, I thought so-and-so was going to marry my nephew. And like,
yeah.
And I don't really, the lines for the family are kind of confusing. I don't know if
their
blood.
That's how they stay rich.
Yeah, but it just did.
And how they keep houses in the family, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, just wanted to draw attention to that just briefly.
Absolutely. So on their way back from town to their house, they see Mr. Bingley and Mr. Darcy on horseback. Mr. Darcy immediately sees Mr. Wickham with them and gives him a cold look and rides off on their horses. So Mr. Bingley follows. Lizzie and Mr. Wickham have a conversation about why that was so weird. And Mr. Wickham tells Lizzie a story about how they grew up together. And when Mr. Darcy's father died, he had given him part of the estate. But Mr. Darcy said he was jealous and he took away the part of the estate that he was supposed to inherit. Of course, this completely turns Lizzie off and is like, oh my God, Mr. Darcy's such a terrible person. And then we have Mr. Bingley's ball. So again, a little bit of a time jump here, probably a few days. At Mr. Bingley's ball, Lizzie is trying to find Mr. Wickham. It turns out he's not there. He's been called away. But Lizzie has to dance with Mr. Collins, who has set his eyes on Lizzie.
And just like an awkward ball, there is a lot of cringiness in this movie that I kind of had to look away. A lot of it actually around Mr. Collins. I find him to just be a very...
Yeah, he's a little bit cringe, yeah.
Which is by design, though. He's supposed to be a little bit of just an unsavory... Not unsavory, but just like, ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. Then Mr. Darcy asks Lizzie for a dance, and of course she says yes. While dancing, they briefly talk about Mr. Wickham, and then Mr. Collins rudely goes up to Mr. Darcy to speak. And again, it's not something that you'd normally do in the society You, I think, probably have to be introduced instead of just going up to him.
Perhaps the first time we really get to see a little bit of sizzle from Mr. Darcy and Lizzie, because at the first dance, yes. He's like, oh, I never dance unless I have to kind of thing. But he willingly danced with Lizzie. There were a few conversations before that you're like, huh, is there maybe some chemistry? This was the first time I think we saw it, you know?
Yeah. The next morning, Mr. Collins comes down and asks Elizabeth to marry him.
Oh, my God.
She declines and abruptly leaves. And, of course, the mother is terrified that Lizzie said no. And she runs after her and tells her that she has to marry him, and then goes and gets her husband and whines and tells her husband, Mr. Bennett, that she has to tell her daughter, Lizzie, to marry Mr. Collins. This was a great speech by Donald Sutherland.
Oh, beautiful. Where he's like, you're going to disappoint one of your parents no matter what, because I won't talk to you if you marry him and she won't talk to you if you don't, kind of thing. And you can see Mr. Bennett is, I think Lizzie is his favorite.
Yes, I would agree.
I think he even says that. God, marriage is just flying all over the place in this movie. It's quick. It's hard to handle. Like, there are some people who are doting with each other, kind of like, ooh, like, is there some chemistry happening? And then Mr. Collins just whips his flicking, you know, thing out. And is like, I'm going to marry somebody this weekend. And you're like, holy. This was the first point in the movie where I'm like, a lot is happening here and a lot's going to happen.
My assumptions are that marriages were more contracts at this point in time than actually for love.
Absolutely.
Yes. It was for convenience or for money or for wealth, but
security,
protection, not being a spinster.
Although Mr. Collins does seem to think he's in love with Lizzie, which is like, okay, dude, you literally showed up and you're like, Jane's the one I want. And they're like, no, don't go Jane. Maybe get Lizzie instead. And he's like, oh, you're right. I do like Lizzie.
So later that day, Jane gets a letter from Mr. Bingley saying that he's going to be leaving to go back to the city, and that he probably won't be necessarily pursuing Jane anymore. Doesn't come right out and say it, but doesn't not. And then Charlotte, Lizzie's best friend, is now engaged to Mr. Collins. So lots happened in the same day, if not maybe a day or two. Again, time is not a construct here.
Charlotte, I'm like, oh, it's that girl. Mm-hmm. Who is she, a sister? I was actually a little bit confused, to be honest.
She doesn't necessarily want to marry him, but again, like we just spoke about, protection, and that she was on the verge of becoming a spinster.
Mm-hmm.
Now Charlotte has moved to the city and has invited Lizzie to go and visit. It turns out that they've been invited that evening to Lady Catherine's house for dinner. So Mr. Collins' next door neighbor. She is of extreme wealth. And also her nephew is Mr. Darcy.
So they meet. But my best scene is the dinner that follows immediately after.
Oh my God, yeah.
This is the most uncomfortable dinner.
It is.
Lady Deborah, played by Dame Judi Dench.
Yes.
Fantastic actress.
Wonderful villain.
And she's a wonderful villain. She really commands the space, I feel. Like, yeah. you're just eyes gravitate towards her in every scene she's in. And she is just like... vile.
She is.
To Lizzie. Something we have never talked about on the podcast, but I've known about it for a while, and I wanted to bring it up in this movie, is the Bechdel test. Have you heard of this?
No.
It's kind of baseline for progressiveness, or I guess diversity in a movie, especially when it comes to female characters. So there's a requirement to pass the Bechdel test. You have to have at least two named female characters in your movie. They need to talk to each other, and they need to talk to each other about something that is not a man.
Wow, what a concept.
So many, and you would like, be...
Oh my God.
Sarah, you'd be shocked how many movies fail this
that,
test.
I can't even, that's, don't even tell me that.
Oh yeah.
Well, don't even tell me that. I don't even want to know that.
I tell you it because this scene is the reason that it doesn't fail, because you have Lady De Burr, who is just absolutely hammering Lizzie on her education,
right,
on how she never learned piano.
I haven't been fortunate enough.
You play the piano forte, Miss Bennett?
A little, ma'am, and very poorly.
Oh. You draw?
No, not at all.
Your sisters, do they draw?
Not one.
It's very strange. I suppose you had no opportunity. Your mother should have taken you to town every spring for the benefit of the masters.
I'm sure my mother wouldn't have minded, but my father hates town.
On how, like,
it exceeded the expectations of that test.
Yes, but yeah, if you listening ever want to take a deep dive, that might make you not feel great. Check out how many movies fail the Bechdel test, even like current ones. It's pretty surprising how often
it's insane.
Happens.
We're 2024, and that has to be a requirement for movies to do because of how many movies still fail that. Probably a lot of action movies. Like I would assume like Mission Impossible's. Like
exactly.
I'm thinking, Mission Impossible 2, oh, possibly.
Dude, the new Expendables movie has like 20 male actors and like
the
Megan
Expendables
Fox.
4.
You're like, okay, well, that's interesting. Anyway, so this movie actually does pass the test because Judi Dench was so mean to Keira Knightley in that scene.
Yeah, the dinner is an interesting affair, but after dinner is where it gets all spicy.
Okay,
so,
I love this too. This is a continuation of my best scene,
Sarah. She asks Lizzie to play the pianoforte, even though she knows she can't play it. And this is just like a dig to show her superiority, I would feel.
Like, she is so pretentious. She's like, I have the best musical taste in all of England, even though I never learned how to play an instrument. But if I did learn, I would have been a prodigy. And it's like, you are so up your own butthole. It's unbelievable.
And she's so rude to her own daughter.
But Judi Dench does it so well. You're like, she is a horrible person. This is crazy.
The following few days, Lizzie's writing a letter to her sister Jane when Mr. Darcy busts in the house, and then all of a sudden he just leaves when Charlotte returns.
And you clearly, this is one of those like, Lizzie's confused.
So I would be confused.
But like, we know what's going on, and we're like, okay, he has trouble expressing his feelings, which,
yes,
welcome to being a man. But yeah, clearly he's falling in love with Lizzie.
At church, Lizzie finds out that Mr. Darcy ruined the relationship between Jane and Mr. Bingley, and that is why they didn't work out. He didn't think that the family was professional enough. Then all of a sudden, once again, Mr. Darcy is there, and he tells Lizzie that he loves her.
Miss Elizabeth, I have struggled in vain, and I can bear it no longer. These past months have been a torment. I came to Rosings with the single object of seeing you. I had to see you. I have fought against my better judgment, my family's expectation, the inferiority of your birth, my rank and circumstance, all these things, and I'm willing to put them aside and ask you to end my agony.
I don't understand.
I love you. Most ardently. Please do me the honor of accepting my hand.
This is all happening really fast.
Dude, yeah, I know.
She says no, and when he asks why, she tells him because you tore my sister from happiness, and he says, like, he did do that, and he does tell her why, and it's because her family is so unprofessional in how they act at public settings, which I do agree with. Like,
mostly blame the mom, but yes, overall. Yeah,
yeah. And the two younger sisters. I think he saw that it wasn't necessarily
a good fit.
A good fit But again, was that for him to judge? But I think too, Jane is more of a shy person. And so maybe he felt that it was unrequited love from Mr. Bingley's part. But he was in fact wrong after speaking with Lizzie. So after their argument, Lizzie goes back to the house and just stares in the mirror all day and all night. And Mr. Darcy stops by to deliver a letter explaining absolutely everything, including Mr. Wickham. In it, he explains that Mr. Wickham is a lying, money-hungry, gambling man. And when it came to Jane and Mr. Bingley, you know, that is why, you know, he feels bad, but he was there for a friend. She's invited. So Lizzie's invited by her aunt and uncle. So she's back at home now. From visiting her friend Charlotte, she's invited by her aunt and uncle now to go to Brighton with her younger sister. Her younger sister goes to Brighton, and they don't really explain this part really well.
No.
Because Lydia was supposed to go with them, but then we find out, I think, that she was already gone to Brighton. So now Lizzie's just with her aunt and uncle traveling, and she does tell her sister Jane before leaving that she did see Mr. Darcy while she was visiting Charlotte. But not about the part where Mr. Darcy broke them up on purpose.
Correct, yeah.
So Lizzie goes with her aunt and uncle, and while on their travels, just conveniently, they pass by Pemberley, which is where Mr. Darcy's house is.
That's his estate.
The house is massive. Mr. Darcy, of course, isn't home, but his younger sister is. And while she's spying on her plane, Mr. Darcy shows up to surprise his sister.
Whoa, Sarah, you're skipping over the...
And Lizzie's caught.
The overtly sexual statue museum that Mr. Darcy has.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Can we talk about that? So there's this room in his house that has all these statues. And we start off like, wow, such beautiful pieces. And there's also a statue of Mr. Darcy himself there. But there is one statue specifically, you can watch out for it, that has like a great ass. I'm like, objectively, I'm like, holy shit, that's a statue
that's
with an ass.
Nice butt.
So then I decided to Google it, and luckily I did this not on a work computer because it's...
Oh my God.
I found the list...
Is that a thing for people? Like...
made, I don't know.
I'm kidding.
I mean, I found a list, so it's a thing for somebody.
Oh gosh.
The most erotic statues found around the world.
Oh my God.
Starting with it. So it actually looks like this. There's a hermaphrodite Greek statue that specifically has like a very well-shaped... posterior that honestly I think looks like what Mr. Darcy had. There's also a famous statue they recovered from Pompeii in Italy of a goat man and a goat.
Wow. Okay.
Together. Yeah. Okay. Oh, there's, have you heard of this sculpture park in Oslo called Frogner Park?
No.
It's in Oslo, Norway. It's near a playground for kids, apparently, but it has a lot of
that's not, you know, like
statues.
I was thinking we were going to talk about like statues from Marvel, like David, like the Statue of David.
Oh,
like
we could.
Florence. Like that is what I was thinking.
He's rocking some stuff, right?
He is rocking some stuff front and back. And like, I just, that's where I thought we were going with this. I did not think we were going.
I just found a list of wild statues.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mostly European, surprisingly.
Well, most definitely. I feel like that is. Yeah.
I mean, we went to a restaurant in Croatia that was called Lady Pee-Pee.
Yes.
And whatever you're imagining is probably pretty close because there's a statue of
outside.
A woman.
And
peeing.
It's a fountain.
It's a fountain of her
fountain.
Peeing.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not a lady peeing. It's a fountain.
Yeah, but it's a fountain of a lady peeing. Like, yes. She is. Anyway, it's a lot. You're like, oh, wow, this is something.
They really went by the name. Yeah.
And then to make a restaurant, like, okay, here's the vibe of her. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen a woman pee?
The restaurant.
And then we're going to do food.
The restaurant was really, it was really cool. It was a really cool restaurant, all lady pee-pee things aside.
Yeah, well, it gave you food poisoning. So how cool. Oh, was it?
Okay, the view was gorgeous, but yes, it
great
did give me,
view.
It did give me food poisoning. Yes,
yeah. I think we have a photo of the statue that we could probably post somewhere in the event that anybody's curious.
Oh gosh, yeah.
I don't,
somewhere.
Maybe Instagram might not like it, to be quite honest.
It probably won't. No.
Well, you know what? I'll leave the rest of the statues. You can go ahead and find
and
some
Google
stuff
it
online.
Yourself.
Ooh, there's some wild stuff in here. Let me tell you.
So after Lizzie's caught, Mr. Darcy runs after her and they briefly talk and she walks back to town by herself, leaving Mr. Darcy standing there. And when she gets back to the hotel pub that they're staying at, Mr. Darcy's already there talking to her aunt and uncle about having dinner with them, his family, the next evening.
Okay, hilarious subplot that they reference a few times in this movie is how Keira Knightley's character just loves to walk places.
She does, she I know, I love it.
Anywhere.
It's my favorite thing.
And people comment, they're like, did you walk here? And she'll be like, yeah, and they're kind of like confused look. So obviously Mr. Darcy made it to the location before her.
Good Lord, Miss Elizabeth, did you walk here?
I did.
Because he was like, oh, obviously. Like, I can bring you there on my horse. And she's like, no, I'm going to walk.
I like walking.
And then she shows up and he's already there like, yeah, because he took the horse. Like, you should have just taken the horse.
I think she does like walking, but I think, too, she's become accustomed to it because her family doesn't use the carriage often.
Right. They don't.
Because they don't have, exactly. So they do go to his house for dinner. Lizzie meets the sister and gets along famously with her. And the uncle gets to go fishing, which is all of what he wants to do in that overpopulated lake that they have.
Oh, it is stocked with fish.
Yes, yes. And all is well. She's even warming up to Mr. Darcy. They get back to the pub hotel and Lizzie gets a letter saying that her younger sister Lydia has run off with Mr. Wickham and will ruin the family by doing this.
So I laughed out loud when this moment happened just because this, like I said, this movie is like a runaway train of just things happening, people proposing to so-and-so's engaged. And then it felt like we were finally kind of having a moment of like, oh, okay, yeah, like she's just hanging out with Mr. Darcy. They've got chemistry. That's great. And then she comes around the corner with the letter. I thought she was acting.
like a little charade.
Like a little, a little skit or something. She's like, she's a runoff with Mr. Wickham. I'm like, going on?
Oh, it's so funny. I mean, clearly Mr. Wickham is extremely desperate for any type of cash out that he will marry whoever.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Sarah, I do want to kind of pull the bandage off a conversation I think we need to have.
Okay.
Which is, Mr. Darcy.
Right.
We're going to find out in your thirst factor later on, but like, what are your feelings? Matthew McFadden, good looking guy, attractive. Were you attracted to him in this movie?
He's a little bit like 17th century emo.
Oh yeah.
Like a little bit, you know, like that's kind of the vibe that I get from him.
Yes.
Not necessarily, you know, up my alley, but
kind of like My Chemical Romance. To be honest, with
like I think I might have chosen Donald Sutherland in this movie.
Oh, stop
I'm kidding,
it.
I'm kidding, obviously.
Stop it.
No. I think he was like it was very time period pieced. Out like he wasn't overly attractive.
He had the bangs.
I think to be honest,
the
men in Bridgerton are way more attractive. But thank you, Shonda Rhimes. You know,
thank you, Shonda Rhimes. So I do want to talk about and like it's not just like attractiveness, but I just want to talk about like who did it better, maybe.
Okay.
Of iconic roles that have been done by multiple actors either in quick succession or recently, because Mr. Darcy, 10 years before this film,
right.
Is played by Colin Firth.
And yeah, that would be tough.
And I mean, Colin Firth only continued his rise after the fact that like by 05, he's a very well-known household name. He's kind of a big deal. Then we have Matthew McFadden trying to step into his shoes in this role.
I kind of like that he wasn't super popular though, when he played.
Yeah.
Mr. Darcy. Like I do like him as Mr. Darcy. I think he's like, you know, just mysterious and he played that role really well and you didn't really know what he was thinking. Like he did a really good job at it.
Okay, can I hit you with another one?
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, for this, I'm not doing any superheroes or any comic book stuff because they get redone so many times. But how about Sherlock Holmes? Because we have Robert Downey Jr.
Yes.
We have Henry Cavill in the Enola Holmes series.
Right.
Will Ferrell recently was Sherlock Holmes in like a comedy piece.
Sorry, Will Ferrell was?
It did not review well.
Clearly not. I've never even heard of it.
Johnny Depp even recently played Sherlock Holmes. I mean, not recently, but like recently enough.
Like I would say Robert Downey Jr. and Henry Cavill. Absolutely.
Okay.
Great plays. I loved the two movies that Robert Downey Jr. did.
How about Jack Ryan?
Like Jack Ryan, the most recent TV show?
Yeah, is that not John Krasinski?
Yeah.
Because Tom Cruise also played Jack Ryan in a movie.
Yeah, no, the TV show was much better.
Okay. Cinderella. We've had so many Cinderellas.
Yes.
Lily James played Cinderella. Anne Hathaway in Ella Enchanted, like I'll count adaptions of Cinderella. Camila Cabello recently played Cinderella. Anna Kendrick, Into the Woods, that was a Cinderella.
Right.
Hilary Duff, A Cinderella Story, we'll count that as well. Who's been the best Cinderella?
The
list is actually longer.
I think they're all such different iterations. I mean, you could say Drew Barrymore and Ever After is a Cinderella iteration. Brandy did you know, the Cinderella as well in the 2000s. Like,
you're right.
The iterations are just too different, I think, which is kind of cool. Like, they each tell their own story, because time and time again, we get very, very, like, the same thing again and again and again. And I think they all did a good job at being, well, different. I mean, I love Hilary Duff's version because it was just something I grew up with.
I was going to say, like, there's a right answer to this.
I loved Drew Barrymore's Ever After, though.
Okay.
Yeah. Which we have yet to do for the pod. But I mean, Hilary Duff, lover.
And you know what? This last one, I don't know if you're going to vibe with it because you probably don't remember a lot of these. But like, Robin Hood has been played by Kevin Costner. I feel like that was back in the 90s.
Remember Robin Hood and Men in Tights?
Carrie Elwes is also on my list. That's a Robin Hood. That counts as a Robin Hood.
Absurd movie.
And then Russell Crowe played a Robin Hood. And most recently, Taron Egerton played a Robin Hood.
You know what? I haven't watched them to know them enough. Like,
I feel with you though. Carrie Elwes in Robin Hood Men in Tights.
That movie was absurd.
That movie is hilarious. It reminds me a lot of The Princess Bride, where like they were very out there in their comedy in a way that like just worked for the movie, but like taking a step back, you're like, this is wild.
Super bizarre, super weird, just hilarious all together.
Like, there's a vivid moment that I remember is when there's an archery contest and Robin Hood loses, and Carrie Elwes is like, I'm not supposed to lose.
Yeah.
And then he's like, does anybody have the script? And they're like, oh yeah, we should look at the script. And then every person pulls out a script.
It was like self-aware.
Yes, exactly.
But it wasn't, you know?
In a way that The Princess Bride is kind of self-aware sometimes.
Yes.
Like, where you could see the mats when they were doing their sword fight. Kind of like that, where it's like thought out, but it's like meta, you know? Anyway, let's continue on with our story.
So Mr. Darcy is present when Elizabeth gets this letter, and he understands that the family will be ruined. And he also remembers that he also has hurt Elizabeth in the way of getting his sister, or getting her sister to not have a relationship with Mr. Mr. Bingley.
You know what? Let's retroactively play a game, because you have at times said it both ways throughout the pod.
You know what's funny? I've written it in my notes both ways, and I don't know why. It's because I want to throw the S in there. So I do apologize all the times I've said Bingsley.
Oh, don't apologize.
When I meant Bingley.
Make it a little retroactive drinking game. Go back to the beginning of the pod. Start from scratch. And every time she says it wrong, you can take a beverage.
You've never corrected me.
No. Well, you know what? The first time you did it, I quickly went to my notes to see like, oh shit, I've been saying it wrong. And then I realized, I'm like, no, she's been saying it wrong.
And you know what?
But you were already on a roll and I couldn't stop you. So
I even had, as everybody knows, I had subtitles on because I watch things with subtitles, but I kept on having to remind myself that it was Bingley, not Bingsley.
Yeah.
I don't know why I did that.
I also just assume if you and I say something wrong, I assume I'm the one who's wrong.
This is true.
You're
90%
right.
Of the time you are.
Yeah. So I just assumed that you were right. And then you said it the other way. And I'm like, okay, I don't think she knows.
Well, I did, but I just, yeah. So the uncle finds Lydia in London, and she is to marry Mr. Wickham, if the family agrees, of course, to £100 a year as dowry. Lydia lets it slip at dinner once she's married. She comes back and sees the family with Mr. Wickham as her husband. And Lydia tells Elizabeth that Mr. Darcy was the one that found them and paid for the wedding and everything. And again, you're not really sure what Elizabeth thinks of this, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing against Mr. Darcy once again.
I think she does see it as like, okay, he tried to make this whole thing. Like, he swept the issues under the rug.
And kept the family from being ruined.
Exactly.
They hear Mr. Bingley is returning in once the women are in town one day, and this time his sister is remaining in the city, and only him and Mr. Darcy are coming to the countryside. They, of course, go to see Lizzie and Jane's house first, the Bennets, but the visit is very awkward, and Mr. Bingley runs out and is very anxious. He's kind of playing out the conversation that he wanted to have with Mr. Darcy outside the estate. Mr. Bingley comes back and asks Jane for her hand. Lizzie is outside crying by a tree because she has, in fact, realized that she loves Mr. Darcy.
Dun, dun, dun.
In the night, Lady Catherine shows up and shows up to the Bennet house and asks to speak to Lizzie alone. And she asks Lizzie if she is engaged to Mr. Darcy and that Catherine's daughter is supposed to be engaged to Mr. Darcy and they have been since children.
Has my nephew made you an offer of marriage?
Your ladyship has declared it to be impossible.
Let me be understood. Mr. Darcy is engaged to my daughter. Now what have you to say?
Only this, if that is the case, you can have no reason to suppose he would make an offer to me.
You selfish girl. This union has been planned since their infancy. Do you think it can be prevented by a young woman of inferior birth?
Elizabeth is out walking, and this is my best scene. Literally the last scene of the movie, like second last scene of the movie. But I loved it. I thought it was really well done, actually, filming-wise.
Yeah.
Elizabeth is out walking in the early morning, as she does, and sees Mr. Darcy walking toward her. She apologizes to Mr. Darcy, and because, of course, he was the one that helped with Jane get with Mr. Bingley and have Lydia marry Mr. Wickham when she ran away instead of ruining her family. And he tells her that it was all for her. But she must tell him how she feels, that if her feelings have changed, of course, since last April, again, time we don't know, that he still loves her, but that if her feelings have stayed the same, then he will part and, you know, let it go and let the love die. But that he says that if she does love him, he never wants to be apart from her again.
I mean, this is one of those moments that if you talk about like all time rom-com romance movie quotes, you've
bewitched me body and soul, and I love you. I never wish to be parted from you from this day on.
Like I said, it was a great scene. And then the movie ends with Mr. Darcy asking for Elizabeth's hand by going to her father first. And then Elizabeth going in after to speak to her father because they have such a close relationship. And her father realizes that she does, in fact, love Mr. Darcy. And I mean, they're going to be rich. And allows her to marry him, and it ends with that.
It did kind of feel interesting that it ended like
I know I wanted to
Donald
see them
Sutherland.
I know, like, oh. I wanted so to see them get married, and it end with them getting married, but it doesn't.
Like, oh, we're here with Mr. Bennet, and that's it.
Yeah,
but like a very satisfying end. Quick facts.
Director Joe Wright was not initially keen on Keira Knightley playing Elizabeth, believing her to be too attractive. He changed his mind upon meeting her, deciding her tomboyish attitude would be perfect for the part. Or, as she tells it on the Graham Norton show, he initially thought I was too pretty, but then he met me and said, oh, no, you're fine.
A little backhanded compliment. Not really, but yeah.
At the beginning of the movie, Elizabeth is shown reading a novel titled First Impressions. This was Jane Austen's original title of her novel before she altered it to Pride and Prejudice. Additionally, the text of the visible pages is readable when paused. It is the last chapter of Pride and Prejudice with the names changed. Matthew McFadden, Mr. Darcy, has very poor eyesight. In the misty morning shot, director Joe Wright was behind the camera waving a red flag, so Matthew knew where to walk.
Stop. You know what? There are moments where he squints, too, and I'm like, oh, it's just part of Mr. Darcy's
no,
character.
He's blind.
But maybe he was
well,
just...
Well, he's like, he has very poor eyesight, yeah. This movie is set in 1797, the year that Jane Austen wrote the first draft of Pride and Prejudice. This is unusual, as most of the film adaptations are set in 1813 when it was revised and finalized.
So a little bit of a different era. Slightly.
Yeah, different era, slightly. different costume, actually. And I'll dive in literally right now. Joe Wright set this movie in 1797 because he disliked the empire-waisted gowns of the late Regency era. After doing some research, he discovered that Austen wrote the first draft of the novel in 1797, when this style of dress would only be worn by the most fashionable members of high society.
Okay.
The director specifically instructed Keira Knightley never to pout throughout the whole movie. There is, however, one scene in which she does, but that scene was shot by the second unit without Wright present. According to Knightley, Wright still complains when watching this movie over her breaking this pout ban.
As if I was actually reading something. While I was prepping for this, I did Google. I'm like, Keira Knightley gets a lot of hate. For what reason, though? And I looked it up. And literally, like, a lot of people were like, I don't know, she pouts. And people, like, a lot of the hate for her is totally inexplicable and it's baseless. But a lot of people are like, yeah, she just, I don't know, she pouts. And I don't like that. Okay. Feels like a weird reason.
Yeah, yeah. The actresses who make up the Bennett family, Keira Knightley, Rosamund Pike, Jenna Malone, Tallulah Riley, and Carey Mulligan, went to the Bennett house location in Kent before the crew and played sardines, which is similar to hide and seek in the U.S., in order to get better acquainted with the house and each other before filming began. While editing the scene with Elizabeth and Mr. Darcy's first dance, Joe Wright discovered that they had inadvertently gotten the entire scene in one take via a camera in place to take establishing shots. The single take version is in the finished movie.
Really?
Rosamund Pike was director Joe Wright's first choice for the role of Jane. She turned down the role of Rita Skeeter in Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire for this movie.
Wow.
I could see her as Rita.
Yeah, I could as well.
I think she would have been really good.
She feels like she makes sense in Harry Potter.
Yeah.
It's funny because some of these actors are also in Hunger Games, so it is interesting that they just kind of feel like they fit in a whimsical
certain era,
world.
Yeah, like a certain world, yeah. Dame Emma Thompson did an uncredited and unpaid rewrite of the script. She received a special thanks credit at the end of this movie. One of two scenes that Emma Thompson wrote was the scene in which Charlotte Lucas tells Elizabeth Bennet that she will marry Mr. Collins. The other one is the scene in which Elizabeth tries to tell Mr. and Mrs. Gardner and Mr. Darcy about Lydia's elopement with Mr. Wickham. Here, Keira Knightley's walking in and out of the room was Emma Thompson's idea, according to the DVD commentary. When you thought she was acting.
When I thought she was. She's run away with Mr. Wickham. Thank you, Emma Thompson, for that.
All the exterior Pemberley sequences and some of the interior, including the sculpture gallery, were shot at Chatsworth House. Hopefully I said that properly. I'm sorry if I didn't. Property of the Duke of Devonshire, as the house functions as a private home and is also the most visited stately home in England. Several of the interior shots could not, however, be done there and were instead shot in Wilton House in Wiltshire. Director Joe Wright managed to cast Dame Judi Dench reportedly by writing her a letter saying, "I love it when you play a bitch," and petitioned Donald Sutherland to take the part of Mr. Bennett. As Wright said in an interview in 2005, "We ended up having a long email correspondence about everything from 18th century agriculture to my relationship with my father. I cast Donald, A, because he's a god, and B, because you needed someone of that strength to handle those six women." On a similar note, he mentioned he was reluctant to cast Simon Woods as Mr. Bingley, as he had previously been in a relationship with Rosamund Pike. He said, I tried very hard not to cast Simon, but I knew he was perfect. Finally, I rang Rosamund Pike and asked if she'd mind, and she said, absolutely not. They hadn't seen each other in over 2 years, but the next day they were dancing together, and it was lovely. Simon Woods, who was a natural blonde, had to dye his hair red for the role of Mr. Bingley. Oddly enough, it continued to grow red after filming, something for which Woods resents the director for. When Elizabeth is at the lake after rejecting Mr. Collins' proposal, a flock of geese flew off the pond immediately after director Joe Wright yelled action. This was unplanned. The director cast Donald Sutherland after seeing him in Cold Mountain. Sutherland reminded Wright of his father, which is why they talked about it in their email correspondence. Jenna Malone, who's American, and Donald Sutherland, who is Canadian, are the only non-English cast members in this movie. Mary Bennett was originally dropped from this movie to leave only four sisters until it was decided at the last minute to leave her in. In the book, Elizabeth visits a portrait gallery in Pemberley. This was changed to a sculpture gallery for the movie, in part because they were filming at Chatsworth, which has a spectacular sculpture gallery, and also because the director felt it was more dynamic way to stage the scene. In the DVD and Blu-ray commentary, the director said he was very fond of the Gardeners, Elizabeth's aunts and uncles, so he filled their scenes with warm tones and showed them eating lots of delicious food. Keira Knightley was preparing for her role in Domino, the movie in 2005, while she was filming this, and she had already cut her hair. She had to wear a wig during the last few weeks of filming and long sleeves to hide her muscles.
She's getting ripped.
I know. I love it. Oh, yeah. When I read that, I was like, oh, that's funny. According to the director's commentary, Carey Mulligan, who played Kitty, thought of her mother's funeral during her first crying scene, which was also her first movie. On subsequent takes, when she ran dry, Carey thought of what song would be played at her own funeral, and it didn't work quite as well. The English country dances done in this movie are Young Widow, Wakefield Hunt, The Bishop, Dutch Dollars, Thigh Pig, Black Bess, Duke of Gloucester March, and Monix Maggot.
Okay, we do have some listeners in the United Kingdom.
Yes.
Would love to know what thigh pig
is.
It's
T-Y-T-H-E, so I hope I said
T-Y-T-H-E.
It was...
T-Y-T-H-E. Tithe?
Tithe pig?
I have no idea.
Yeah, anyway.
We probably sound so ignorant.
I know, and I'm not trying to. I'm really trying, and if anybody could let me know. But if you've heard of these, please also let us know. They were cool to see in the movie, but...
when you give them names, it sounds weird, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely. The dinner table scene at Lady Catherine's house was the first scene shot for this movie. Elizabeth's conversation with Mr. Wickham under the tree was the last. Filming at that location lasted from the 18th to the 22nd of July in 2004, according to... the website. And in this movie, the house is Burley's house in Lincolnshire. I'm sure I said that wrong and I apologize. The house is called Rosings, filmed almost entirely on location. The only set built for the movie was Meryton Assembly Room, where Mr. Darcy and the Bingleys are first introduced, because assembly rooms of that type no longer survive in England, or at least they're very hard to find, and it would be too narrow anyway for everybody to be in there. Tallulah Riley, who plays Mary, the third Bennet daughter, is younger than Carey Mulligan, who plays Kitty, the fourth daughter. Jenna Malone, who plays the youngest daughter, Lydia, is older than both of these, and Keira Knightley, who plays Elizabeth, is also younger. The last scene of this movie that shows the newlyweds Elizabeth and Mr. Darcy outside of Pemberley showing affection for each other was absent in the UK release. And the release, and the one that we saw as well. Right? Because the last scene is Donald Sutherland.
Yeah, it's Donald Sutherland chilling in like a chair or something.
Well, I'd like to see this version.
Yeah.
The scene where Mr. Bingley rehearses proposing to Jane was improvised. Initially, it was supposed to be shorter, but Simon Woods was so good that the scene was lengthened. Although not directly stated in this movie, it was Mr. Collins who told Lady Catherine that Elizabeth Bennet was engaged to Mr. Darcy. According to the director's commentary, Tamsin Merchant, who played Mr. Darcy's sister, did her own piano playing in this movie. The almost kiss during the rain proposal was unique to Matthew McFadden. It came up in his screen test with Keira Knightley due to their chemistry with each other, as it is stated by the DVD and Blu-ray commentary. The frequent close-ups of Matthew's hand are a reference to the fact that the ultimate goal of the Bennet sisters is a wealthy man's hand in marriage, and a foreshadowing of the fact that Elizabeth does in fact eventually win Mr. Darcy's hand. The orchid that Mr. Bennet is cultivating at the beginning of the film would not have been introduced to Britain at this time period.
Honorable mentions. I want to talk about the... And I've got a game for this as well for you, Sarah. I want to talk about the absolute sheer reckless confidence to do this movie 10 years after a Pride and Prejudice thing had already happened, starring Colin Firth. Because, like, currently we're in an era where everything's getting remade, everything's getting redone, right. Reimagined, sequels of things that are, like... This happened in 05 when that wasn't necessarily the case. We weren't in that era yet. So, I'm pretty impressed that they... went at this and got away with it and did it really, really successfully.
Yes, they did. Yeah.
So I want to play a game with you, Sarah, okay. Of how excited are you of the upcoming re-things on a scale of 1 to 10, one to 10. Being I hate this, 10 being I love this. Tell me how excited you are for a Freaky Friday sequel.
Oh, I am excited. A sequel? I'm excited. I think I'm like... 9.
Yeah, the sequel's been locked in. Lindsay Lohan confirmed excited. It. Jamie Lee Curtis is in. Okay, how about Harry Potter becoming a series?
Okay, like I am like a 3.
Okay, so you're not a 1. I thought you were going to be a 1 on
this. You know what? They're still like only they're only 30.
Yeah,
like,
Daniel Radcliffe is 30.
This is not Emma Watson, I think, is the same age as us. Like they are not old enough. Like it okay. My thing is that they had so many storylines that they could have covered. They could have gone with the founding four. They could have gone with, you know, a different storyline. They could have gone with the Order of the Phoenix. They could have and had like a, right, you know, a way back cool. when yeah. Harry's parents were younger and, you know, Longbottom's parents
like
were
a prequel,
younger.
Yeah.
And like, you know, when the dark wizard Voldemort was really at his height, right? Like, and like then pushed it into it, and then I think they could have done. I think they're premature. I think HBO doing it, they're going to do a really good job. But for me, at this point in time, it's just too soon.
It's tough when you grow up with actors too, as like somebody beloved to you, like Daniel Radcliffe being Harry Potter. We saw him grow as a person, literally grow up before our eyes, and it's weird to be like, okay, forget about that guy.
Well, and we grew up too, right?
We're gonna have a new kid and you're gonna watch him grow up too. It's like, I just saw this.
Like, I don't know. They I've seen like multiple people say like different things that they could have done, and I think maybe they workshopped them, maybe they didn't, but I think you could have a whole new era and a continuation era of a Harry Potter world, and you'd have the audience, both new and old, to go along with it.
How about Twister, the 90s?
Oh, you know what? I actually really like Twister. I think that'll be fun.
Yeah, I think it. Yeah, I agree. Did you know the video game Minecraft is getting a movie?
Oh, gosh,
I'll put that in
really?
Like the reimagining.
I don't know. I mean, maybe a 2?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Sherlock Holmes 3. Robert Downey Jr. is going to
really?
Come back.
He's going to come
Sherlock
back?
Holmes again. Yeah.
Is Rachel McAdams going to come back?
Oh, I have no idea. Okay. It's very much in post pre-production right now, so we don't really know.
Okay. Oh,
ton,
no. I'm kind of like, that's going to be a 7 for me. I really quite liked them.
How about you might hate this or you might love it. There's actually going to be a Fantastic Beasts 4, apparently.
Really?
I've seen it on a few lists. Yeah, it's still like in the works. Warner Brothers is very weird with stuff right now. I feel like not a lot of their things are hitting. So they're very like herky jerky.
I mean, unfortunately, you know what? Again, like I said, love the Wizarding World. And maybe that's why they're not branching out to do a different wizarding story because of how Fantastic Beasts ended up. But I think that wasn't their doing. I think there were other things at play with Johnny Depp and all of that. That, you know, they had to recast him and
as well Ezra Miller was in that as well.
And Ezra
which
Miller's
is a whole other
backlash
thing.
Yep. And all of the things. I the movies were good. I liked the first movie the best.
It was so good.
And I think as time went on and things had happened outside of the movie's control, it also affected how the movies were done.
I agree.
You know? Jude Law was great in it though. I would say it's probably a 5. For me,
I feel like the first movie captured like the really cool,
the magical world.
It captured the magic, and then after that, it's like, but Grindelwald's here and he's scary, and it got very dark and very brooding. And it's like, I want the magic.
Well,
you know?
And it was unfortunate because I think it tried to tell the love story between Dumbledore and I think it got overshadowed by all the other media outside of the film, and. And I mean, all the backlash with J.K. Rowling as a complete person outside, right? Like you had oh my God, Newt's love interest wasn't even really in the third movie because of her dislike of J.K. Rowling. Like,
oh, is that true?
Yeah, like
oh my
she
gosh.
Was she was in it, but at the very end of the movie.
Wow.
Yes, because she didn't want to take part in it anymore, but she was still a main character, and they just kind of wrote her as like she's a lead auror now.
I feel like we need to do a full Harry Potter.
Sorry,
rewatch.
I know I can
separate
totally
podcast.
Be... I love Harry Potter. Sorry, guys.
You could clearly talk for a while, but hey, maybe when this series comes out, we can do a separate thing.
Oh, I don't know.
When I say we, I mean just you.
Yeah. Let us know if you'd want to hear me do that.
Do you know there's a new Chronicles of Narnia happening?
Yes, I did. And actually, there's not much out on it. I believe they're trying. I don't know what they're doing, whether they're redoing it or whether it's like a not a spin-off or like a sequel or prequel, but like it's are they related to the original kings and queens, like the original four, or like what's going to happen? Because they can't bring the original four back because the oh my God, I can't remember his name, but Edmund, he no longer acts. Like, he is out of the acting world.
I'm going to be honest. When I asked you these questions, I didn't think you were going to be like that crazy person on TikTok with the Venn diagram. Like, oh yeah, here's what's going on. This guy doesn't act anymore. And you know, like
I have like the red yeah, yarn.
This girl over here does not like J.K. Rowling. You know, she wasn't only in the last scene there. Like, you know a lot more about this than I do, it turns out. there's going to be a Django Unchained sequel, Django and Zorro. Oh.
Okay, which and is Zorro.
Yeah, I know. I don't know how that's going to vibe.
I don't know how that's going to go. Mm-hmm. I liked Django, the movie.
How about a Robin Hood, but he's dead. It's just Maid Marian, and it's called Marian.
No.
Okay.
Like a four?
Yeah, okay. And The Edge of Tomorrow is getting a sequel. Live, Die, Repeat,
really?
And Repeat. Yeah.
It's getting a sequel.
Yeah.
Well, that The Edge of Tomorrow was a really good movie.
The Edge of Tomorrow.
For anybody who has not watched it and likes kind of like an action, like, you know, that was a really good
one. It was one of the first movies that we watched together.
It was.
In your mom's basement, actually. I remember that when we were first
dating.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
That movie was fantastic. And I think it was just marketed incorrectly because apparently the marketing was like, it was supposed to be called Live, Die, Repeat, which is a lot cooler than The Edge of Tomorrow. So it's interesting that they're like, we're going to do a sequel and we're actually going to call it Live, Die, Repeat.
Yeah, maybe it'll marketing is trying to be better.
Yeah, maybe they figured it out.
Oh, I think like I'm kind of excited about that. Eight.
What's your honorable mention? I went through a whole game.
I know. I quite liked it and I enjoyed it. And I'm sorry that probably went on a lot longer than you thought it was going to be. You know what? Keira Knightley, I thought she did a really, really good job as Elizabeth. I like you said, I know there was a lot of backlash just on generaling on Keira Knightley. And there was also her backlash for her being Elizabeth because they thought she was like too pretty and like too thin and all this stuff. But I quite enjoyed it. Now, when I think of Pride and Prejudice, I think of her in that role. So I think she did a great job and without the pout, you know? Pout ban.
What should have been?
Well, now I want to see the end of the actual movie, not with Donald Sutherland's face.
You know, how about that? Doesn't he say, like, he has some, like, semantic, just, like, little...
Yeah, like,
you know, wow.
It could have ended with like a famous Jane Austen quote or something, but no, it ended with Donald.
My what should have been is, and it's not really what should have been because this film is pretty close to perfect in my opinion, which we're going to find out in rewatchability in moments, but I just wish, I don't wish, but it would have been cool to have name tags of all the dang sisters and all the friends at the beginning because, like, we meet so many people. It's a torrential downpour of characters. Mr. Bennett, Miss Bennett, Mr. Bingsley, Mr. Darcy, that guy's sister. But there's all these other sisters. I kind of want to just, like, name tags of people to begin with because, like, there's so much happening. But that would be my only what should have been for this film. It's really great. And now, overall rewatchability.
All right, my rewatchability is chemistry 4.8, storyline 5, thirst factor 4.6, imagination 5, soundtrack 3.8, pianoforte, cheese 5 for an overall score of 4.7 out of 5.
Yeah, so I've got similar scores. I've got chemistry of 4.37. Storyline, I've got a perfect 5 out of 5. Like we talked about, so much is packed into this film. It's over 2 hours, but it doesn't really feel like it's over 2 hours. There's an interesting thing with this one where there are a lot of like very establishing shots where it feels like we're just looking at a field kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel slow, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you're right.
Thirst factor of 4.35. Imagination of 4.26. I'm just going to knock it down because like, Jane Austen's original work was very imaginative, but let's be real. This is a film adaptation.
Right.
Not only that, of source material that had literally been adapted 10 years prior.
I gave it a 5 because I liked that they did it in the 17. I liked that they did it in the 18th century, so like 1797, and all the other iterations of this have been in the 1800s.
Right.
So.
Soundtrack, I've got 4.65. Agreed. Great soundtrack. Cheese, a 4.72. The cheese was almost perfect. I'm really just knocking it on that one. She's run away with Mr. Wickham.
See, I liked that. That was hilarious.
Well, yeah, I thought it was hilarious too, but I'm like, this is okay. All right. But like, honestly, this film was not very, like, there was not a lot of bad cheese. It's a very high score. It's really just that one scene that sticks out in my mind.
Yeah, I think it's hilarious now that you've mentioned that that's why what you actually thought.
And that gives me an overall score of 4.55. It's been the rom-com rewind of Pride and Prejudice. You have anything to talk about on the pod, throw us an Instagram follow and DM.
Thanks for listening.